Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. It's July 17, 2022. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Kim Bonner. Welcome, Kim. I am so delighted to finally have you with me.
It's a pleasure to join you, Gloria.
Well, you've heard a few of these, and so you know we start at the beginning, and I don't feel like I've known you very long or very well, but that's one of the things that makes this so much fun. Can you begin by telling us, where did you take your first breath? Where were you born?
I was born in Connecticut on a submarine base. I am the oldest of three, and I moved around quite a bit as a child. So I lived in Connecticut, Maryland, Virginia, and New Jersey in different places by the time I was 10.
And was this because your father was in the service?
Yeah, my dad was in the military for 20 years, and he also switched jobs a few times after that. So we did quite a bit of moving. Both of my parents are from New Jersey, so they eventually wanted to get closer to family.
That was going to be the next question. Where was kind of their family base? How many siblings and where do you fit?
I'm the oldest of three. My brother is exactly 3 years younger, and my sister is 13 years younger.
So you have a bit of a span there.
We do, but I think what really characterizes my immediate family and broader family is how close-knit we are. And so even though my sister and I are 13 years apart, we are extremely close.
And has that always been the case? Were you maybe thrilled to finally have a baby sister at that point? Or how did you feel? Do you remember?
Yeah, I was really excited. I adore her, always did. And I think she mostly enjoyed having much older siblings. She always was a bit grown up for her age.
Well, since you moved around quite a bit, I'm guessing that once you got into school, that involved changing schools from time to time. Is that true?
Yeah, I think throughout elementary school, I changed schools every year.
And do you remember how that felt to you? Did you feel like you were always the new kid, or did you look forward to it?
Yeah, I definitely didn't look forward to moving, but I think the skills that it taught me were really helpful. Because I remember how it feels to be new and to be yearning to be welcomed. And so that's something that sticks with me. And I want to welcome others, and I want to keep an eye out for people who maybe don't feel like they fit in.
Did you always go to public schools?
I went to public school for elementary, middle, and high school, but went to a private university.
So during those early years, as you were moving around, and it sounds like it was pretty much all on the East Coast mostly, tell me a bit of what it was like to grow up on the East Coast. Now, we have actual seasons back there, and it snows in the wintertime. Do you have any sort of childhood memories that come to mind?
Yeah, I remember summers in Virginia watering our garden. I was probably 8 years old. It would take me about 45 minutes, but there was just a profusion of flowers. I remember the fireflies flashing at night and the kids running around trying to catch them in our hands and release them. I remember snow days and those snow days being snow with, you know, a decent amount of snow, not maybe a half an inch.
Amazing that you should mention fireflies, because that's one of my passionate memories as well. And I've just recently been talking to other friends who've maybe traveled east, and I said, did you see fireflies? So I love it that you mentioned that. Was church a part of your growing up years?
Yeah, so my parents are Catholic, and so every Sunday I was at church. And the religious education for children is called CCD or PrEP. And so I participated in that. So yeah, was definitely involved in church growing up.
And you had your first Holy Communion?
I did. I had my first Holy Communion. I had my confirmation, volunteered at Vacation Bible School, was involved in Catholic Bible studies. Yeah.
And in terms of school during those early and maybe even into junior high and high school, what subjects were of interest to you? At what point did you start to think, oh, this is kind of interesting, or maybe, oh, I really do not like this?
You know, I really liked all the subjects. I liked to learn, and I think that was a constant for me. Even when moving, there's always an opportunity to learn something new, and I knew it was something I enjoyed and was good at. So I remember my friends being a little exasperated as I would read ahead chapters in U.S. history because I enjoyed the textbook so much.
And so as you were graduating high school, you're the oldest in the family. Was it understood what would come next, or that it would be some higher education, or what was that like for your family?
Yeah, in my family, academics are quite important. And so there was an understanding that I would be furthering my education. And I also intended to compete as an athlete in college. And so for both academic and athletic reasons, it was definitely a next step.
Were you involved in athletic pursuits in high school as well? Tell me about
it. Yeah, I was a cross-country and track runner. And so that was a passion of mine, and the teams that I were on were really special to me, and we had goals, and it was amazing to see that you could work hard and achieve the goals that you set. It was very empowering and inspiring, and I think it helped all of us moving forward.
Do you know where that desire or that skill came from? Is that something that's in other family members, or?
Yeah, I think many of my family members are athletic. A number of my aunts played professional basketball. My dad rode in an international competition. So there definitely is that athleticism. And for me, it was something that I started to gravitate towards. And what I enjoyed about running was that it really did depend on how much heart you wanted to put into things. There was talent involved, but a lot was training and a lot was the intensity that someone chose to bring to a race.
So where did you actually go to high school?
I went to a high school called Shawnee High School in Medford, New Jersey.
Did you ever win any awards?
Yeah, so our team won the state championship in my junior and senior year in cross country. And the team awards stand out to me much more than the individual. So that's what I remember.
So it's time to go to school and to pick a university or a college. How did that happen and where did you end up?
So I had a number of good options. I was really fortunate. And one of the things that really helped to make the determination of where I went to school was that my sister was much younger and I wanted her to know me. And so I decided to go to school in New Jersey, and I went to Princeton University. I had a mentor who had gone there who loved it. I knew the coach, I knew the campus, and I knew it was a great school.
So did you actually live on campus some of the time?
I did. So students, 99% of students live on campus, and so I did live on campus.
What do you remember about dorm life?
I remember that it was fun to spend time with people my own age all the time and fun to just learn from different people's lives and exchange ideas.
Did you go there for all 4 years?
I did.
And I'm assuming that at some point you needed to declare a major. When did that happen and what was it?
Yeah, so initially I started in ecology and evolutionary biology. I wanted to work on climate change and conservation. I got an opportunity to do an internship at the U.S. House of Representatives, where I was working on energy policy. And what I realized in that was the area that I was probably best suited for would have been more of an engineering space, which I was not as intellectually interested in. And so I came back to school and was reading a book called Mountains Beyond Mountains, a book about Dr. Paul Farmer, who founded an organization called Partners in Health, initially in Haiti. And it was meant to provide high quality healthcare in rural and underserved areas. Reading that book opened my eyes to some of the global inequities in healthcare. And so when I came back to school that year, at the start of my junior year, I decided to shift from climate change and conservation focus into molecular biology so that I could have a stronger scientific background to take on health and inequities.
And had science been one of your interests or something that, again, you felt like you were pretty good at?
I don't think I was necessarily good at science, but I knew it was something that I wanted to work on, learn, and be engaged in that space.
I'm fascinated that you were able to spend some time in the U.S. House of Representatives. Tell us a little bit about what that was like as a, 19, 20-year-old?
Yeah, I was 19 when I was there. It was fascinating. I think what I saw there was a tremendous amount of activity. People worked incredibly hard. And what would happen is they're essentially, you're doing chess. So you're preparing for A, B, C, D, E, F, G eventuality. And the other side is doing the same. And so you're doing a tremendous amount of work to move forward 1 centimeter. And so the way that my boss explained that to me was the purpose of the House of Representatives is not necessarily to move fast or to be efficient. It's to prevent bad laws from being passed. And so if you look at it from that perspective, it's more of a safety valve than it's meant to be like a locomotive. And that was helpful for me to learn. And I think, you know, policy is very interesting to me. I ended up getting an opportunity to pursue a master's in policy. And so really, really enjoy that space.
Would you feel comfortable telling us who your boss was? Who you were working for?
You know, the representative was Sherwood Bullard, and he was from upstate New York. So essentially, the way the House of Representatives works is as a staff member, as an intern, you can work for an individual representative, or you can work on a technical committee. And so I was under a technical committee, and because the House of Representatives was Republican controlled, every committee fell under the purview of a Republican. And so what was very interesting about this individual is he really cared about climate change. He really cared about reaching across the aisle. So his chief of staff was a Democrat. And so you could see echoes of a much more bipartisan era in working with him. And he retired some years ago, but I really appreciated that opportunity.
While you were going to school, were you also working outside other than like your internship, but did you have like a job that you were also looking at?
I mean, I had a host of jobs. I did the laundry for the varsity athletes. I was an SAT tutor. I worked for a township of Bridgewater. I worked for the State Department one summer. I worked in the library. So there was always something that I was doing for work, but it wasn't too many hours a week. It was just a little bit.
So when you finished there at Princeton, what degree did you have? And then you briefly mentioned, but what came next?
Yeah, so when I finished at Princeton, I had a Bachelor of the Arts in Molecular Biology, and I had an opportunity to get essentially a 4-year scholarship. 2 years were placed within the U.S. government, and so I went to Tanzania, was seconded to U.S. Agency for International Development, and then was seconded to the Tanzanian National Malaria Control Program. And so I spent 2 years there helping to distribute malaria bed nets, write up that story, support grants, and generally be of assistance, and then had the opportunity to also pursue this degree in policy.
Tell us just a little bit about life in Tanzania. That sounds amazing.
It was amazing. And, you know, two of my dear friends from Tanzania actually came to my wedding 2 weeks ago. So I still have dear friends from that time. But it was really my first time living by myself. It was my first time living in another country. I had to learn a new language and had a decent amount of travel for work. So I had the opportunity to travel to most of the regions of Tanzania. And the beautiful thing about Tanzania is while there are over 130 languages spoken, there is one national language of Kiswahili. And so if you learn that language, then you have the opportunity to communicate with people all across the country.
So where were you actually based in Tanzania?
So I was based on the coastal city of Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, which is the commercial capital of Tanzania. And it was exceedingly hot there. I remember feeling like I lived in an oven. It was so hot. My apartment was well ventilated, but did not have air conditioning. And I either took a local bus or I biked to and from work. And so I really had a lot of opportunities to see what daily life was like for people. And especially through my church, I was one of the only foreigners. The other individuals, there was one family from South Africa. And so there really was an opportunity to be immersed in language, in culture, and in day-to-day life.
Tell me about church in Tanzania.
Yeah, so in college, I had joined a different faith community that would maybe be considered more evangelical. And so that community had a network of churches around the world. And so this church I was joining in Tanzania was very small. It was about 15 people. But what was great about that community is it was incredibly close-knit. And people really looked out for each other and were really committed to the mission that they saw before them.
Well, as always, I have lots more questions. Just that whole shift in your faith journey would be another whole story that we could possibly go into. And I'm sure just traveling around in Tanzania, that there are lots and lots of stories there as well. But we're going to bring you back. And what came next after those 2 years?
Oh, my goodness. After those 2 years, I did a 2-year master's degree again at Princeton. And then I was hired by Doctors Without Borders or Médecins Sans Frontières. And I worked with them for 4 years in Switzerland, in Sierra Leone during the Ebola outbreak, in Kenya, focused on vaccination in Ethiopia and South Sudan, and actually in New Jersey, where I worked remotely for some of their research objectives. So really had an incredible experience there. And during the Ebola outbreak in Sierra Leone, I realized that I wanted to work in outbreak response. I wanted to help in complex emergencies. And I realized that to do that, I needed to go back to school. And so at the age of 30, I went back for a PhD with someone who I really admire and trust as a person, as a researcher, who was my advisor. So I studied epidemiology.
And was that again at Princeton?
No, that was at University of Minnesota. So I moved to Minnesota sight unseen, learned that snow is not a big deal, learned that you can run in negative 30 degrees, and actually, to be honest, spent about half of my PhD living in Uganda, where I was doing research on what drives people to take or not take a new vaccine. So I wasn't cold the entire time I did a PhD.
A little warmer in Uganda than Minnesota.
It was.
Did you continue to run during much of this time?
Yeah, throughout all of it. And when I lived in Minnesota, I found this fabulous group of people, part of an organization called Mile in My Shoes, where individuals who are leaving the criminal justice system or individuals who are in shelters would meet up with other members of the community and run together every day or several times a week. And so the groups that I ran with were primarily folks leaving the criminal justice system. I loved that. I ended up becoming one of the coaches, and I found it so inspiring to see people inspired when they set goals for themselves and saw that they could achieve it. It was inspiring to see where people went after their time in the criminal justice system. And it was also very sobering to see just how challenging it is to find a job with a criminal record and how challenging it is to reconnect with family when one individual has been incarcerated for some time. And so that was an incredibly meaningful experience to me.
I think it's an understatement to say that it sounds like you have a heart for people, and especially those maybe who aren't as privileged as some of the rest of us.
I think that people are endlessly fascinating, and I think there is so much you can learn, especially from people who've had a different life experience. I think some of the deepest conversations I've had have been on runs with some of the folks who had experienced some real challenges in life.
Well, there are many, many more stories, but somehow you ended up in Portland, Oregon. So if you can give me the quick version of how you went from Minnesota / Uganda to Portland.
Absolutely. So I knew that at the end of my PhD, my goal was to work for the CDC's Epidemic Intelligence Service. So these are what's known as disease detectives. So that was my goal. So I became a disease detective, and they send people all over the country. So I could have been sent to Hawaii. I could have been sent to Connecticut. I could have been sent to Georgia, but I was sent to Oregon. And so I moved here sight unseen. My sister helped move me out. We drove across the country in the middle of the pandemic. It was June 2020 when we moved out, and I got involved right away with the Oregon Health Authority and learned a tremendous amount from the really excellent colleagues who were there, as well as from colleagues at the CDC.
Is your tenure here, like, do you get to decide how long you stay here? Or I don't know. And CDC, just to explain, is the Centers for Disease Control, just to put that out there. But talk a bit about that.
Yeah, so the fellowship is only 2 years. So my fellowship has ended. And for a little while, I wasn't sure what was going to happen next, because I had fallen in love with someone. I really needed to stay in Oregon, but I wasn't sure if there would be a job for me. What ended up happening is the Centers for Disease Control ended up hiring me for a remote position. So I work for the Global Immunization Division, and I help with increasing vaccination uptake and understanding what drives vaccination all over the world. But I do it from Portland, Oregon. So it is a dream come true.
And you just started that job within the last couple of weeks as well, if I understand correctly.
That's correct. My first day was Monday.
This past Monday. Oh my goodness. A lot has been happening. But before we get to, I want to talk a little bit about that too. But somehow or other, you found Portland Mennonite Church, or it found you. What's that story?
So I found Portland Mennonite Church on Google Maps on a run. I have been part of this quite close-knit faith community for about 15 years. And had come to a point where I realized I needed to make some changes for my own faith journey. And so I started searching for other faith communities. One of the benefits of the pandemic was the opportunity to visit congregations virtually and see what their environments were like. So I had been attending a few fellowships that had been recommended to me. And during a run, came across a church, thought I would check it out, looked it up online, realized it would not be a fit. But as I was looking up churches on Google Maps, my eyes happened upon Portland Mennonite. And I remembered that the theology of Mennonites in many ways is similar to my own beliefs. And so I thought that there would be a resonance there. And so I went to the website, looked at what Portland Mennonite was up to, was really excited to see that there were opportunities to protest, and was inspired by what I saw of the community based on that online presence.
So did you check out some of the worship services online then during the pandemic or?
Yeah, so I reached out like I did for every congregation. I reached out to the pastoral leadership, and I think Rod was on sabbatical. So it was Britt who connected with me, and she and I would go on walks all around Portland. So that was my walking introduction to Portland. And yeah, I joined the worship services on Zoom. And so I think the first time I was in person was almost a year into my time in Oregon.
Well, we're thrilled that you found us.
Me too. I'm very grateful to be here. This has really been a good opportunity, and I'm just grateful to be here.
Had you heard of Mennonites? Were you a bit familiar with some of the beliefs, or was that kind of a whole new thing as well?
Yeah, so I knew, I really appreciate the Anabaptist background of Mennonites. So that, I think the community that I had come from also identifies as Anabaptist. And so I really respect that process. I respect the adult decision-making of deciding about membership. And I know that Mennonites are often leaders in social justice movements. And so I thought that there are ways I wanted to grow in my faith and in my walk that required engagement with a broader community. And I wanted to learn from Mennonites' practice.
We have to get this love of your life here. So give us a brief story about that. And congratulations on your recent marriage.
Thank you so much. Well, this was entirely unexpected. 2 years ago on my birthday, I went to one of my work meetings and someone came up and greeted me in Kiswahili. And I was so surprised. And this person, his name is Wakosi, knows about 100 greetings in different languages because he likes to welcome people in ways that make them feel welcomed. And so I remember he made a really positive impression that this is someone who gets to know people and really cares about where they come from. But we, you know, we crossed paths. We had really only a working relationship. And then eventually, sometime later, as he was shifting roles, we spent some time together outside of work. And I got to know his wonderful kids, and really just fell in love. It was pretty fast, but I think knowing who he is and how deeply he loves people, how much he cares about the world around him, what an amazing dad he is, made it really easy.
So when did you get married?
We got married on July 2nd, 2022.
And how did he know that you knew Kiswahili?
I think that he usually, when he hears about a new person, will ask a few questions. And so he had asked the person who had hired me a little bit about me, and they had mentioned I'd lived in Tanzania. And so he knew that the language of Tanzania is Kiswahili. So he chose to greet me in Kiswahili.
That's a beautiful story. I love it.
Yeah, he is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful person. And his children and his family are just a joy.
And we hope that maybe one of these times we'll actually get to meet them as well. That would be special.
I hope so too.
Well, Kim, there are obviously so many more stories, but we don't have time as always. But thank you so much for taking the time to just give us this little glimpse into your amazing, wonderful life.
Thank you so much, Gloria. It was a pleasure to get to chat with you today.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.